The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hey, it's Chuck Oliver Show. Starring Chuck Oliver. And I'm in today. Whatever happened to HIPAA? Like, I don't know. I'm minding my own business at home with food poisoning, and I go on Twitter, and I see the Chuck Oliver Show's announcing, well, Chuck ate bad shrimp. I don't know. Where's the respect? So, I am recovering. I appreciate everybody coming here every day for your 2 hours, and I thank Heath. Not for texting or for tweeting yesterday. I don't thank him for that. Hashtag privacy. But I do thank Heath for hosting. It's good stuff yesterday. There's one SEC coach that has a bigger problem than the very real criticism he's getting. It's the sources, like plural, I'm talking. Billy Napier he's got right now on March 5th, it is not a very deep discussion. Hey, want to talk about shortcomings in Gainesville? Sure. And even like periphery level interested folks can start, you know, giving facts, right? Really, you know, things that matter. Your biggest competition on the team may be at the only, do you realize quarterback's the only position in the starting 22 where really you hope you only play one person the entire game outside of a blowout one way or the other, but you really like, and their best competition maybe, or their most overflowing talent is at the spot where you can only play one guy. So there's that. Whatever. But people even on the periphery can look at Gainesville and say, man, they've got some issues. Like issues like this, 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 this. And it's not a short list. Well, what I'm about to tell you, what I'm about to read to you, some of the comments I'm about to say, this is not folks on the periphery. This is not Chuck Oliver sitting like a state away. This is not somebody in West Virginia. This is not somebody in Tulsa. When I say Billy Napier has bigger problems than the actual, like, concrete, tangible issue you tackle horribly, and the team has since you showed up. Like, the past two seasons, tackling has been the biggest issue for the defense. And so tackle better. See, that's a very real criticism. It's the most basic thing out there. I don't know if it's criticism. This is more of an opinion. But, dude, what's up with the two offensive line coaches? He just hired somebody else again. He just hired a guy, I want to say, from the league. And so he's got his co-offensive line coaches again. All right, if you're going to devote 20% of your coaching staff to that one position group, I want to see fire breathers. I'm not kidding. I want Godzilla. I want a left tackle walking out of the ocean scaring Japanese people. All right? That's literally who I want, and that's not been what it is. Been fine enough at times. Then there were times when it was false start and hold and false start and hold. Even I say when it's been fine at times, like one of those times was the Tennessee game last year. Do you know how that Tennessee game started for the offensive line? Even that night, I was like, oh boy, this looks like Utah. Then he got better. So that's me, and I'm just a guy who I have no personal stake in it. And so that's one level of, like, if it's somebody in Wichita who watched one game and thought, Florida, man, I watched them against Utah. That's how they are every snap of every game. Okay. Someone who doesn't have any sort of personal investment in the good or the bad as the commentary, See, that's its own issue, because that might just be fair evaluation. That's me. That's one issue. Billy Napier has a bigger problem than this. When I say the sources, public slings and arrows are never fun to take, but when the sources are undisputed on-premises experts, that's the toughest to respond to or deny, and that is what Billy Napier is dealing with today. Trevor Etienne, who we would have never said this a few years ago. Do you remember when the UCF kicker couldn't be on YouTube? Because he would get views and get like $17 a month. Trevor Etienne, on another Georgia Players podcast, which the whole time across the bottom it says, you know, Heath Klein Chevrolet or, you know, whatever, whoever the sponsor is. Tate Ratledge, offensive lineman. He had teammate Trevor Etienne. Do you remember when players couldn't speak to the media? Yeah, do that now. And freshmen can never talk. All that's gone. Trevor Etienne, and by the way, everything's still okay for the most part. You still have kids be goofballs and say things they shouldn't, but this whole, they used to just put the media clamp down on kids. That was always a little too much. They'd even do it with adults. It's about controlling the message. No, my assistant coach, he's 54 years old. He can't speak to you. So Trevor Etienne, who bought into Billy Napier, knew him from way back in Louisiana, went out to Gainesville. I've said Etienne, I saw him play one game in Gainesville. I was like, that guy's a game wrecker. And I have always used that. My very top level for an SEC player is your SEC quality player, your SEC starter. You're an all-conference sort of guy. You're a game wrecker. Like Julio Jones was a game wrecker. Darren McFadden was a game wrecker. Like, it's an SEC conference game. We're in SEC defense. I got nothing I can do with this guy. Like, he's just better. Derrick Henry, you know what he was? He's a game wrecker. Trevor Etienne, I watched him play. I was like, game wrecker. Well, he never really got full run. And I know loyalty and keep your word, or maybe he was even unstated or whatever, but Montrell Johnson's a good running back. Etienne's a game wrecker. Quote on Tate Ratledge's podcast, so I could stay at Florida, be running back 2 on a losing team, or go somewhere and possibly be running back 1 and win a natty. End quote. Shane Matthews, who his fourth season doing color on the radio for the team, and Shane Matthews, who set all kinds of records there and has been around Florida football, I don't know, except for his time in the league, 35 years. Shane Matthews knows what it's about. He's been the radio analyst every day that Billy Napier's been the head coach. Quote, everybody thinks DJ Lagway is the savior of Florida football, and he might be. But anybody who has watched Florida the last 3 years, they know how horrendous we've been on the other side of the ball. Oh. Steve Spurrier, who I've said this. The first time I went to, there's only been a couple of times. Like, I interviewed Hank Aaron one time. I just privately was thinking, I have nothing relevant to say to this man. He was too important. I interviewed Jim Craig one time. Go look up him. He was the goalie of the Miracle on Ice team. And I was like, he's beyond me. I can't. Steve Spurrier. I showed up to interview him the first time, and I was like, how am I going to come up with a question good enough to ask Steve Spurrier? When he played, he was the best player. When he was a coach, he was the best coach. And now he's at South Carolina, and I'm like, Heath, will this surprise you at all? Like, I was working for an Atlanta station. I go to practice in 05 was his first year. Is that right?
Yep.
And so I show up, and this was Spurrier. And I'll give him credit. He's always himself. I'm there basically covering the Georgia team. I'm trying to get quotes for the Atlanta market. And so I need something relevant. I can't ask him about Jasper Brinkley's ankle or whatever it was. Coach, so it's my turn in the scrum. And I was like, so Mark Trick's offense, that's the challenge. How do you think you'll defend it? He looked at me and says, not my job to pump up his program. Said, you want to do that? Go talk to somebody in Athens. And I was like, okay. Does that surprise you that he said that to somebody that just showed up and asked a question?
No, because if there's one thing Steve Spurrier has built his brand on through the years, it is blunt honesty, and that includes about his team. Like, he will come in and, "We just stunk today." You know, he will let it rip at all times on all subjects.
Was it Vanderbilt that they beat by 2 touchdowns? And afterwards, he was like, "People who watch this game tonight think we're good." He said, "We should be embarrassed by tonight." Now, I don't know if that's a good thing, but it was transparent, and he was always authentic.
Well, I remember in his second year at South Carolina, he literally told the fans, it was after, I think, that Auburn game, that they played him on Thursday night and came within a score, almost could have caught a pass in the end zone, would have won the game. He said, "We've got to stop cheering for near misses. You know, that's loser behavior."
People.
Like, his fans were like, "Yeah, support. Yes, we love this team. We like what's happening." He's like, no, stop that crap. Nope.
Now, the funny thing was, in 06, I was there for an August scrimmage, and I'd already learned my lesson about, you know, softball questions. He'll play the game. Some coaches will play the game and give you the sound bite because they just know you're from out of market and you just want someone, you know, then they'll just move on. There was a freshman quarterback who had been in the scrimmage, and somebody was from out of town and needed a quote about that kid from Virginia or whatever. "So-and-so looked good tonight. Can you give us a quote about this freshman quarterback?" And Spurrier looked at him and said, "No, he's a lost freshman. He has no idea what he's doing." I was like, he just learned his lesson about Steve Spurrier. Whatever you think about it, he's transparent. And I respect it. Steve Spurrier, there's a feeling around the Gators of, what the heck are we doing? There's a lot of questions that I don't have the answers to about organization. Just because you hire the most people doesn't mean you're going to win. All these extra people, I question how much that really helps. Billy is a good guy who works his tail off. You know what, when you say, "Hey, look, I love Heath. He's a great guy who works his tail off." All right, go ahead. What don't you like about it? Billy's a good guy who works his tail off. I like Billy. Good family man. But we do wish the organization was a little bit more tidy. Now, if you also have ever been around Steve Spurrier, you understand how he chooses some of his words and the cadence, and sometimes he uses sort of a sing-song little whatever. Chooses phrasing that seems very arm's length and non-combative, like a little bit more tidy. Boy, it is clear what his point is in this. Now, that part about this criticism from insiders whose opinions can't be ignored, I said that's what he's facing today. Today, as in March 5th, we're nearly 6 months from the season starting. UF does not start spring practice for another couple days before any on-field anything, 6 months before the team can actually lose a game. This is the criticism, and from ETN, Spurrier, Matthews, that's a pretty wicked PR brew. And these are people who are invested personally, heartfelt in them succeeding. And that's where it stands. So it's what it is, brother. It's a great program. It is not playing great football right now. That's how it is. All right, we break. We continue next.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on a Tuesday. We talk college football, and we talk all programs in college football. So I promise you, we'll get to the headliners. I'll ask if Drew Aller will be better in year two. We'll get to all of it. But we're going to start with Big Ten with a good friend of ours from SportingNews.com, senior writer Bill Bender. Bill, welcome to the program. How you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate your time today. We'll get to all the bigger names, but I want to know, how did David Braun get that done last year? And by the way, I need to tell people now, I purposely said his name first. He's the Northwestern head coach. That wasn't just, "Hey, we have scholarship limitations," or "We're on probation," or "There was a recruiting scandal" or something. This was like gruesome, like really seamy stuff. How did he turn that into what he did last year? They won 8 ball games and cared about a bowl.
Yeah, they did. And they out-physicaled a good Utah team in that bowl game. I think it just, you take where they were from the opener against Rutgers to the end of the season, I mean, a fantastic job. I think part of it comes from where he comes from, that championship DNA, being at North Dakota State, being able to transition that well to Northwestern coming off the summer that they did, they played great defense. I think that's where it started. They played great defense. They ran the ball. And they didn't turn the ball over much. So he didn't get mentioned as much in the Coach of the Year discussions, but he deserved to be in those.
I mean, it was, you know, Bill O'Brien went to Penn State. They were like, dude, just stop the bleeding. That was an overwhelmingly talented roster, even after Silas Redd and whoever. Like, everybody could leave, but some people stayed. This was a different thing, man. It was awful because the players are actually involved in it. All right, let's go to the headliners. This is still part of the warm-up act, I guess. Well, Iowa would be better on offense this year. You got to have some talent. I know they had injuries and the quarterback's out and blah, blah. And then they also had a guy with stone tablets as a play sheet. Will they be better on offense?
Yeah, we'll see. You know, obviously the coordinator switch finally happened. We'll see. I mean, it's amazing how their defense played with what the offense they had and the way that Phil Parker continues to churn out guys on that side of the ball, the way they play assignment football. Their job becomes harder now, obviously, Chuck, because why they don't get to feast on just the Big Ten West. That middle tier of the Big Ten, when you throw in UCLA, USC, Washington, Oregon, it's the same thing in the SEC. I'm just anxious to see how that middle class of the conference, so to speak, shakes out. And for a school like Iowa, that's going to mean they're going to need to score more points.
All right, well, I'd mentioned one of the things we'll talk about, and specifically quarterback Drew Aller. Will he be better or more consistent or perform against bigger-name programs better? I think that Michigan game started probably the toughest times he'd had on a football field since he was like a sixth grader. Tell me anything you know about Drew Aller to tell a Penn State fan how it could be better.
Well, I was at the Ohio State game. He struggled in that one, too. And, you know, he came off the field, and I was telling my kids that it was a lesson in accountability. He was very upset. He looked like he hadn't seen something like that, like you said, probably since junior high or ever in his life. I think comes back. They got to get him some receiving talent, though. Julian Fleming, five-star transfer from Ohio State, should help. Yeah. And, I mean, that's part of it, right? You can have the running backs, but they just didn't have on the outside what Ohio State and Michigan did. That was literally the difference in the Ohio State game. They had Marvin Harrison, Penn State didn't.
Oh, you're right about the order of the games. It was the Ohio State game that started the unpleasantness. The Michigan just kind of put the exclamation point behind it. All right, well, let's talk about Ohio State because that looked like a fun shopping spree. I tell you, if you got the budget, go out and do it. Tell me about Will Howard, because he is this big, giant, good-looking kid to play quarterback, and now Chip Kelly running things. I mean, it sounds like he should just be spinning gold this year. Tell me how you think this unfolds.
I think they're going to run more than people think, though. You got Quinn Sean. You guys have seen him play. Travion Henderson. So I think Ohio State with Chip Kelly, one of the misconceptions about his offense, you think Chip Kelly, you think wide, fast, deep passes all the time. They're actually going to run the ball more. I think they're going to be a 60-40 type offense in that regard. He had two running backs average 5 yards a carry at UCLA last season. I think he's going to do that with Travion and Quinshon, and then, of course, Will Howard, who had 80-plus rushing attempts at Kansas State last year.
How's Michigan going to look? Because it's going to be different, obviously, just because you don't have NFL guys – returning starters, experienced starters who are NFL guys at every position. And you've got a new head coach, first time, blah, 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 all of this stuff. Like 15-0 in national champs, anything is a drop-off, but tell me how much.
I mean, the schedule's brutal. Nobody's going to complain about their schedule next year. They play Texas on top of USC and Washington and Oregon and Ohio State on the road. So they're going to have some tough games in there. I think Sharon Moore, the difference with Alabama changing from Saban was they kept some continuity. They didn't lose a bunch of guys to the portal. The cupboard isn't exactly bare. It starts at the quarterback position, whether it's Alex Orji or Jaden Denegal, as a starter behind a quarterback that lost one start the last 2.5 seasons in J.J. McCarthy. So I would say there's a little bit of a honeymoon there, don't you think, though? They won one, and so if they go 9-3, 10-2, it's not going to be the end of the world.
All right, last program, and you'd think if you only have one more Big Ten question, don't waste it on Maryland. But no, I want to ask you, is Mike Locksley doing a good job? Because I'm going to tell you something, as someone who is not invested, whether they win or lose, they're kind of fun to watch. Outside of the weirdness of what Tagovailoa decided to do, outside of that, that offense was humming, man, many times. Tell me what you think about that program.
Again, another program that's going to benefit from not playing Ohio State and Michigan every year.
Yeah.
You know, they're one of those teams that they've got the recruiting base, that Catholic conference that's in that DMV area. I think Loxley has done a nice job. You look at the draft every year, Chuck. They get four or five guys, or at least a couple guys in the combine that pop. And like you said, other than Tua, they've been the one team to throw a scare in Ohio State to Michigan the last few years. So I like where he has the program, anxious to see if they can move up in that middle class that I was talking about. And talked to Mike Loxley about the helmet communication stuff a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
He's got that program in a decent spot.
Yeah, no more big like poster board with a picture of the Hulk, an orange, you know, none of that stuff anymore. Brother, I appreciate your time. It's always great to get your insight. Thank you.
Hey, anytime, Chuck. We'll talk again soon. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Bill Bender, sportingnews.com. So they're fun to watch, and I'm a big fan, and call me softy or whatever. I'm a big fan of second chances. And if you go back and look at Mike Loxley's career, I mean, granted, he got invited to Tuscaloosa, which everybody can go to Tuscaloosa. When Nick Saban was the coach there, it was the one, no matter what you go look at Mike Loxley, his background, what had happened before Tuscaloosa. And I was like, I don't even know if he'll get to Tuscaloosa. And then things are way, way, way better after that. It was a spot of redemption. It absolutely was for a lot of folks who had flown off the rails, either just purely by production, a lack of production, or by other transgressions or shortcomings or frailties, et cetera. If Nick Saban brought you to Tuscaloosa, like, that's why everybody looked at Jeremy Pruitt and was like, I wonder if I'm going to Tuscaloosa. Nick wanted to hire, who was it that he got the no on? Was it Jeremy or Hugh Freeze or somebody? Word was he got the no, and I can't remember. Heath, do you remember he got the no on? I do not. He got a no on somebody, apparently Sankey, either official or not, but it was a shot at redemption. And so a lot of folks took that route, and a lot of folks became head coaches again after that, not just for the analysts, but the fact to say it's okay to work around this guy again.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's Tuesday on the Chuck Oliver Show. We're talking, among other things, Kirby and the Georgia coaching staff. Del McGee is now the head coach at Georgia State. We know that. And Georgia has lost. I mean, folks, Del McGee's just the latest. Brian McClendon, Will Muschamp, Fran Brown. It's a lot going out. He also has lost no coaches to with Del McGee. When I'm an assistant or a coordinator, now I get my first chance to be head coach. I want to hit the ground running. Well, that means people I know, people who speak the same language, people that I've worked with. And so I'm going to go to the current staff and I'm going to hire from there. He didn't really do that. He brought in a couple of analysts from the Georgia staff, but no on-field coaches, not that I know of. So we got to be honest, as many names are on the Georgia State coaching staff, the bigger story here is, well, what kind of shape does it leave Kirby in? Will he be feeling the effects of losing a couple analysts? I want to welcome on right now to answer that question from Dogs247. It's Jordan Hill. Jordan, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Countdown's on, Chuck. 7 days to spring ball, so plenty to talk about, I'm sure.
Yep, and then G-Day, and then you're going to be in Destin for a few days, and then, my gosh, we'll go to Dallas. So it's practically here. All right, so Del McGee leaves, and obviously that's a sizable deal. I mean, Georgia, you just don't shake the tree and get NFL running backs. You have to do something right coaching and recruiting and all that. So everybody knows why Del McGee is an important piece to replace. What about Manry St. Amour, who was an analyst on Kirby's staff, and now he's the O-line coach for Dell, and then also Ryan Williams, who is the quarterback's coach in downtown Atlanta. He was an analyst for Kirby as well. What was the profile of those two guys?
Well, Manry was really interesting. You know, Stacy Searles was dealing with pneumonia back in December, right before the Orange Bowl. He's actually hospitalized for about a week or two, and Manry stepped up. He's a guy that had been a GA at Alabama. He's a young guy. I think he's from Gwinnett County, so he knows Georgia well. And we talked to Kirby Smart right before the Orange Bowl, and he spoke really highly of Manry and what he was able to do. And he actually stepped in a little bit in January while Stacy was getting his feet back under him and was actually out on the road. So really, I think all of those hires that Dell made with those analysts, another guy, Juwan Taylor, some Georgia fans may remember him. He was a linebacker
That's
for
right.
Georgia. Yeah, he is going to be coaching Georgia State's inside linebackers. You know, I think Dell did a very good job, really on short notice, too. I mean, he gets the Georgia State job, and they had started spring ball, had to pause it for a little bit. But getting some up-and-coming coaches, and, you know, we've talked about this a little bit on our podcast over at Dogs 24/7. You know, this could, in the long run, wind up helping Georgia, you know, develop these coaches if, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, Georgia State has success, you know, those guys could find their way back to Athens. But I think Dell did a really good job in assembling this staff, hiring those younger guys, getting Jim Chaney, who he coached with at Georgia, getting Kevin Scherer, who he coached with at Georgia. I think he's done a good job, again, on real short notice, putting his first staff together at Georgia State.
All right. Well, as like I said, there's name and Damian Craig's on board. I was like, there's name recognition. These are big time names. Everybody in the South knows them. Bigger story is, all right, well, what about Kirby's staff? Because it's not just Dell. And when we say running backs coach and receivers coach, we have a tendency, it's not fair, to kind of discredit, like downgrade the actual effects of the coaching in those positions. That's not true. They matter. And then also Fran Brown and even Muschamp. Moving off the field. Just talk about the new profile there, because that's a bunch of change.
Yeah, and it's something that, honestly, Georgia hasn't run into a lot of. You usually see maybe a couple assistants, see guys like a Dan Lanning get a head coaching opportunity and leave Sam Pittman before him. Yep. But yeah, this is a pretty new coaching staff going into 2024. You got Josh Crawford as the new running backs coach. He comes over from Georgia Tech. You've got James Coley coming back, who, you know, I think some fans are a little bit hung up on how his tenure went as offensive coordinator at Georgia, but did a tremendous job as a receivers coach and a really good recruiter. You know, really helped them get a guy named George Pickens back in the day when everyone thought, you know, oh, he's bound for Auburn. So getting him, I think the biggest hire they've made is Travarius Robinson from Alabama, getting T-Rob to come on board. That kind of was the move that allowed Will Muschamp kind of take a step back. He's still going to be an analyst, but not going to be an on-the-field coach. And then getting Dante Williams to replace Fran Brown. I'm really fascinated to see over the next probably 12 months how big the hire of Dante Williams is as far as recruiting. When they got Fran Brown, you could just see Georgia offered a lot of guys around Philadelphia, the Northeast, and landed several of those guys in this last class. Dante Williams is a guy that's coached out on the West Coast. He comes from USC. He's coached at several different schools out there. And you know, it's still early going into 2025 and even 2026 as far as recruiting. But they've offered a lot of guys out in California, and I don't think that's a coincidence. I think they're going to try to make the most of Dante Williams' connections out there and see if it pays off and bring in some of those guys to Georgia.
You're not old enough to have watched Adrian Peterson at Oklahoma much, or are you?
I remember him. I was definitely younger, but I can remember him at Oklahoma and definitely followed him once he got to the NFL.
All right, well, I now feel even older, but the reason I ask is because that's not really what we do anymore with running backs. So I understand that it's not really set up for somebody to get 32 carries a game. What's Trevor Etienne's workload going to be like? Because that kid's fabulous.
I think he's going to be the top back. I'm very fascinated. I think we'll know more about this piece of it once we get through spring practice. But, Chuck, Georgia has 7 scholarship running backs, and I don't think that's a coincidence. Now, I wouldn't be shocked if we see that number drop off probably after spring ball when that transfer portal opens. And probably a school to look at is Georgia State, where Del McGee, the running backs coach, just went. But, I mean, they've loaded up at running back, and I think that, you know, they've understood that they don't have to lean on just one guy. Or even going back to Kirby Smart's first, you know, few years, just 2 guys and like a Nick Chubb and a Sony Michel. You know, they've been a lot more willing to kind of go by committee, let a lot of different guys tote the rock and rely on those guys, not count on just 1 or 2 backs to do it. So I do think that Trevor's going to be the lead back. How much work that is, I'm not really sure. But I think that they understand what they're getting in him. I think there was a reason that they looked to add experience at that position, especially after losing Kendall Milton, Dejan Edwards from this past season. I think he'll be the lead back. I would, you know, maybe guess 12, 15 carries a game, but I think they're going to rely on their depth there, and I think that's probably for the best, just given how physical playing in this conference is.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Tuesday. Duncan Newsmakers line. We're talking to a good friend of ours whenever it's time to talk UGA. How about Jordan Hill from Dogs 247? All right, another transfer, and Kirby has shown we ain't scared of the portal when it comes to receivers, even though we've always heard on TV the color analysts say, well, you need to get timing with the quarterbacks, and so we grew up hearing that for decades. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you can just show up and be better than the other guy. So Landon Humphreys is in the latest hall of receivers. Big, tall kid that can get downfield. Talk about how he's going to mesh with Carson Beck.
Yeah, Landon Humphreys, he's a guy that it's kind of funny. When we were going through this past recruiting cycle, Andre Evans is a guy that Georgia landed a cornerback out of Nashville, and his high school coach was talking to our guy, Benjamin Wolk, who covers recruiting over at Dog 24/7, and was talking about how fast Andre Evans is, and then he just brought up coincidentally. Yeah, I mean, he almost beat a record that Landon Humphreys put up. And lo and behold, you know, a few months later, Landon winds up coming to Georgia. And it's kind of funny, when you go back to that Georgia game in Nashville back in October, the biggest play Vanderbilt had in that entire game was Landon Humphreys. He ran a slant and caught a pass and broke through, I think about a 49-yard touchdown that kind of woke everybody up. It was like, uh-oh, we're about to have a 4-quarter game here in Nashville. But very fast kid, a younger guy, and he's part of what's been sort of a retooling of the receiver room for Georgia. You know, 2 years ago, they went and got 2 transfers at the position. This offseason, they've gotten him. They've gotten Colby Young, who's like 6'5", 6'6", from Miami. Gotten Michael Jackson III from USC. They've really made an emphasis of bringing in some established older receivers. I think London's got the best chance to play a big role on this upcoming team, but I think you're going to see a good mix of those guys going into the year.
Okay, well, you like me and a lot of other people who have been well acquainted with Ladd McConkey's talent, that the surprise in Mobile, I was like, surprise? He played for the national champions. So it started in Mobile. Well, after the combine, like, everybody knows this newcomer, Ladd McConkey. Have you noticed that? I'm like, folks, he played for Georgia. But then the bigger picture, do you have any reservations? Because I have people ask me about, what do you think about him being a first-round pick even? I was like, I think about his knees and his back. Tell me if I'm being overcautious, because it's not my draft pick. It's Cleveland's or L.A.'s or Minnesota's.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be my biggest holdup. Really nothing to do with his athleticism and what he's able to do. But, I mean, he'd been banged up both of the last 2 years. But, again, I do think it's funny. I'm with you, Chuck. I keep hearing about, yeah, a lot of people, man, this guy's sneaky athletic. I'm like, you guys are just looking at him. You know what I mean? You're not watching what he does when he's out on the field. I've never seen anybody who could get open on a field as consistently as Ladd McConkey. And his change of direction is just – it looks like a video game. I mean, I think it was the Florida game where he caught about a 40-yard touchdown where he just totally turned and went in the opposite direction and just had the rest of the defense just watching him run to the end zone. But, yeah, I think it's a fair thing to point out, Chuck, that he has been banged up the back. I mean, he missed the first four games of this past season. But really other than that, I mean, I think he's super talented. If I were an NFL GM, I'd look at him in the second round. I still think that he would be worth it at that spot. And I saw some of the measurements and some of the times that he put up there in Indy. They were comparing him to Garrett Wilson, who's done a really good job with the Jets.
Sold.
I know. It's pretty wild. So I think he's got a chance to be really good. I do understand the reservations. I would look at him in the second round.
Yeah, I think that play against TCU, I mean, they were going to beat TCU regardless, but I think that big play against the Horned Frogs, I was watching, I was like, checkmate. I was like, this thing's done. And that's just what he is. You mentioned one thing. I'm going to let you go, I swear, but you mentioned one phrase there. You said his ability to get open. I have talked regularly about, because we can measure height and weight and 40 time and we can look at receptions and touchdowns and all that, that's a comfort zone because there's a number attached. There's no number attached to your ability to get open, and that's too bad because there are some receivers, that's a huge part of their game. Ladd gets open.
Yeah, and again, you think about how hard it is to do in college and how much harder that is to do in the NFL. I mean, I think what we're going to see, you know, write this down and then think about once we get to, like, October, somebody that's going to have drafted Ladd's going to be like, how did no one know about Ladd McConkey? And I will say for me, you know, sometimes you kind of take it for granted. Like when you cover a team like Georgia that has done a very good job of really having talent at all positions, but you sort of get used to that. You're like, yeah, they got a guy that can do that. But then when you really look at the scope of it, especially when you look at these guys trying to go to the NFL, that's just such a rare talent. And he's a guy, again, been overlooked his whole life. Tennessee fans don't want to hear it. He was a huge Tennessee fan growing up. And they really didn't pay attention to him coming out of North Georgia. Georgia got on him late. It was late in the process, but it wasn't too late and offered him. And I think he's got an opportunity to have a really good NFL career. And, again, some GM probably midway through the season is going to be smiling ear to ear saying, yeah, yeah, we found this guy. No one else really knew about him. The people who have been paying attention knew that he's a very, very talented receiver.
Jordan Hill, Dawgs 247. Thank you, man.
All right. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah, that's Ladd McConkey. It was Mobile. Hey, it was the other McCaffrey from Rice. And maybe he is more of a surprise because he wasn't a receiver previously. He was a quarterback. So I get that. But Ladd is just, it's just funny. Maybe it's because Brock was, like, on the national championship team, you know, Brock was Brock. So maybe it was just there were bigger stars to pay attention to, I guess. Maybe physically, like stature-wise, there were bigger stars. But Ladd, there's nobody left now to look at and go, have you seen this guy? Yes, my wife tells me. My wife asked me, have you seen Ladd at the Combine? He's on TikTok. So I don't know if y'all, if any of you are on TikTok, it's really loud and it never ends. But Ladd's on TikTok at the Combine. And, oh, everybody knows Ladd now. I was like, well, I'm glad that on March 4th, now everybody knows Ladd. Finally, after the career at Georgia and two national championships and everything else he did, and the Senior Bowl in Indianapolis, now everybody knows Ladd. We break. We wrap up next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Honestly, I think people are cowards. I think people have this, you know, this thought in their own heads that I'm going to leave and I'm a quitter, but that's never been me. I mean, these people live, you know, wherever in their mom's basement, saying stuff about me, and they don't know my language, but they don't know anything. They don't know who I am. They don't know who I've been, and that's always who I've been.
Why is it always mom's basement? Some sort of, like, it's a reference to limited social skills, ability to communicate beyond a keyboard. That's Devin Brown, And among other, he's talking about the Ohio State fans, if you're in that category. Like, there's a bunch of Ohio State fans, and then some of them are in a separate category where Devin Brown, he hurt feelings. He's going to be like every other college quarterback who either didn't start the previous year or the program has brought in high-profile transfers, plural. So he's going to quit. He's going to portal himself. He's going to leave. And Devin Brown, among other things, says, well, I didn't play because I got hurt last year. I had an ankle injury. So that's part of why I didn't play. But he's also saying, those people may not know me. And I think that's a reflection, possibly, on them. Now, I remember Tate Martell also tweeting in reference to Justin Fields, because Justin Fields went to Georgia and didn't win the job there and then transferred to Ohio State. And Tate Martell tweeted out, better not swing twice. And then Tate Martell transferred and then wound up playing slot some at Miami and then went home. Devin Brown says, I didn't play because I got hurt and I'm not going to quit. And so that's just what it is. So I'm back. When you hear me say, there's a phrase I use sometimes about get into a college weight program and run and lift. And the third thing is learn how to eat right. No matter what kind of background or home you come from, most of us as a 17-year-old, we really don't eat right. At least not properly to train to be an NFL caliber player, which is when you're the SEC, that's what you're training to be. I have used that phrase, and it's just an example, but it's in the news today. CJ Uzomah is likely, or maybe it already happened, but he's going to get released by the New York Jets. CJ, I did a couple of his games. He went to a place called North Gwinnett, and it's, I don't know, about an hour or so, 45 minutes north of Atlanta. And he was this big, tall, like 6'5", rail thin. I bet CJ Uzomah weighs 100 pounds more now, 100 pounds more now than he did as a high school senior. CJ Uzomah, he's 31 years old now, and if he retires, I'm just going to mention this, it's public, that guy has cash checks, just game checks, not endorsement or to wear these shoes or whatever, $36,654,000, CJ Uzomah. And he's been a good NFL player so far for, I think, 8 years. He is the number one example I have ever seen of somebody who you get into a college weight program and you run and lift. Go Google your computer, CJ Uzomah, North Gwinnett, and then look at him now. He's this big, giant, just and no neck, and just big and big smile on his face because he's CJ and he's always in good mood. And he was a really, really good guy. Everybody loved him North Gwinnett. Everybody loved him at Auburn. And when he's been in the league, everybody's loved him. Well, he's about to get released because now he's a little older and they look and say, oh, you're expensive. $36.6 million, and he was this big, tall, skinny, gangly-looking kid because when you're 16 or 17, you're 6'5", that's how most kids look, and he hadn't grown into his body yet. You do what you do in college and high school football. You put the best athlete at quarterback, and that's what North Gwinnett did. And then Auburn's like, yeah, you're a tight end now. And then the NFL said you're a tight end. $36.6 million, and he's just this big, giant, physical dude now. Heath, how's it Tuesday?
Well, I got a couple of things on my mind here, Chuck. One, I don't know if you saw this or not, but we mentioned yesterday on the program that more than 10,000 players have opted in to the EA Sports College Football video game that's coming out. However, the first player to opt out and have it become a known thing has been reported. Texas quarterback Arch Manning will not be opting into EA Sports College Football 25. And Anwar Richardson, our friend from Orange Blood, saying, quote, I'm told Arch is focused on playing football on the field. Chuck, I assume that he is aware that you don't have to actually play the video game if you are in the video game. It's not like required that you participate in some way if someone is playing with you as their quarterback for Texas. I assume they know this, so I'm not quite understanding how him opting out of the video game. Do whatever you want, but I'm not understanding how this has anything to do with focus.
I went back and looked. I said, I think by my understanding, I was like, yes, you check a box and then $600 shows up in your mailbox. Like that's your total investment is you click yes or no. It's the same effort. And if you click one box, you get $600. If you click the other box, you don't. I saw that announcement, Heath. I swear I read it the same way. I was like, I've called you all here today to tell you I prefer to be left alone. It was weird. It was just weird.
Most of the time, Arch Manning, I think, has gotten praised for how he handled his recruitment, that it was low profile, everything else. This feels forced. This feels very much a, hey, I'm a Manning. We do things different. It's just not a good energy, I think, overall. I think most people were pretty neutral in Arch Manning. This is the kind of thing that makes people say, oh, get over yourself. You're really not that special, buddy. I'm sure this was heavily debated in the Manning camp. I think they misstepped here.
Yeah, it is the look of we are taking this season more seriously than just the end, so we will not be bothered by this folly.
Unlike the other 10,000 guys who just aren't focused like Arch.
Yeah, bad Jalen Milroe. You should take this as seriously as Arch. Wraps it up on a Tuesday. Back tomorrow. More college football talk.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves. And people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY. And there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required. And they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.